All right, welcome to the deep dive. You know, today we're going deep on the Gospel of Luke.
Ooh.
And our listeners sent us some amazing stuff from Dr. Daryl Bach to
Yes.
kind of get us going on this. And we really want to unpack like the big picture stuff here. You know,
Yeah.
where'd Luke get this information?
Yeah.
What was he trying to do with it? Who is he writing to? And then kind of the when and where of it all, you know, when and where was
Right.
it written?
Yeah. It's a big task ahead of us, but it's a fun one.
It is. It is. It's going to be fun.
It's a good one.
You know, and I think it's so important because, like, if you understand these, like, basic building blocks,
Right.
then I feel like you can really understand Luke so much better, you know?
I completely agree. You know, understanding those foundational pieces, I think about it like understanding the ingredients and how a recipe is put together. It just helps you appreciate like the final product so much more.
Exactly. So before we jump into, like, Luke's process, we gotta address this thing called the synoptic problem.
Okay.
Now that might sound a little intimidating, but it's really not, you know. It's basically we're acknowledging that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all have these like really intricate relationships between them.
Okay, yeah.
And it's like this puzzle figuring out how they fit together, you
Right,
know.
right.
They share a lot, but then there's these like really key differences too. And if we can understand those connections, then we can understand Luke's sources.
Makes sense, yeah.
So let's unpack this. Where did Luke get his material?
Well, figuring out the sources of Luke's gospel has kept like biblical scholars busy for, I mean, a long time.
Yeah, I bet.
Like centuries. And there are some older ideas like the Gospels are completely independent of one another.
Okay.
Or the idea that they were just written, you know, Matthew, then Mark, then
Right,
Luke,
right.
sometimes called the Augustinian hypothesis. But those ideas just don't really stand up. When you look at the evidence,
Yeah.
there's just like way too much that's shared between the Gospels, not just in the wording, but just overall how they're structured.
Right.
Plus, I mean, Luke himself even mentions that others have already written about Jesus, which suggests that he's building on existing material.
Okay, so that's out. The Augustinian hypothesis.
Yeah.
So then we have this thing called the Griesbach hypothesis.
Right.
And that one proposes that Matthew was written first, then Luke used Matthew.
Okay.
And then Mark kind of came along and summarized both of them.
Interesting.
And the thing I like about that is that we don't need to imagine any lost sources.
Okay.
And some early church writings did say that Matthew was first.
Yeah, it's got that going for it. It does.
Yeah.
But there are a couple problems with that.
Okay, what are they?
First, Mark often includes like way more vivid and specific details in stories that he shares with Matthew and Luke.
Okay.
And that seems odd. Like why would a summary add detail?
Right.
Plus, Mark's missing like some huge chunks of material that are found in Matthew and Luke.
Or like the whole story of Jesus' birth
Right.
and a bunch of his most important teachings. So if Mark came last as a summary, why would he leave all that stuff out?
Yeah, so that leads us to what's like generally the most accepted explanation today, which is the four-source theory.
Okay.
And this was really brought into focus by Streeter. Can you kind of walk us through that?
Sure. Yeah. So the basic idea here is that Mark wrote his gospel first,
Okay.
and then Matthew and Luke, they both use Mark as a source.
Okay.
And then in addition to Mark, they also had this hypothetical collection of Jesus's sayings.
Okay.
And we call this collection Q.
Okay, what's Q stand for?
It's short for the German word for source.
Okay.
And so you can kind of think of Q as like this ancient wisdom compilation that Matthew and Luke both had access to.
Okay.
And this explains why they share teachings of Jesus that aren't found in Mark.
Oh, I see.
And then finally, Matthew had his own unique material.
Yeah, which we call M. That's Matthew's special material. And then Luke also had his own unique stuff, and we call that L.
Okay, so we got Mark, Q, M, and L.
You got it. So Mark came first, then Matthew and Luke, they both used Mark and this theoretical Q source,
Right.
and then they each kind of added their own content, M and L.
Okay, and then specifically for Luke, the general consensus is that he used Mark, Q, and L.
That's right. Now, the tricky thing is that we don't have an actual copy of Q.
Okay,
We don't.
so we're just kind of like guessing.
Yeah, its existence is really inferred. From the amount of shared material that Matthew and Luke have, that's not in Mark.
Oh, so it's like you have two students who are studying for a test
Yeah.
and they both have the same notes,
Right.
but neither of them wrote them. So where'd
Exact.
they come from, right?
Right. That's the mystery of Q.
Yeah,
You know, the
I
closest thing we have that gives us a sense of what Q might have been like is the Gospel of Thomas. But the relationship between Thomas and like the traditional four gospels. Well, that's a whole other can of worms.
Another deep dive for another name.
Exactly.
Right.
But I think for the purpose of our conversation, focusing on the four source theory, I think it just helps us understand Luke.
Yeah, it gives us a good framework. So yeah. We look at Luke and we see that, okay, he probably had access to Mark. He had his own stuff, this L material.
Right.
And then he had this, you know, shared pool of sayings with Matthew called Q.
It's possible, too, that Matthew and Luke might have used slightly different version collections of this Q material.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't like a set in stone.
Right.
You know.
Not necessarily.
More like just a general idea.
Yeah, more of a fluid tradition.
Okay. So let's zoom in on this L material for a second.
Okay.
This is the stuff we don't see anywhere else. How much of Luke is this?
It's a pretty significant chunk.
Okay.
It's about 42% of Luke's gospel.
Whoa, that's a lot. 42%. So what's that, like almost half?
Yeah, about 485 verses. And it's in this L material that we find some really interesting, like really distinctive elements of Luke. Like, for instance, the detailed stories about Jesus's birth and early life.
Okay, yeah.
Those are things that Mark and Matthew don't even mention.
Like the Annunciation to Mary.
Exactly.
The visitation.
Yeah.
The shepherds visiting the baby Jesus.
That's all Luke.
Okay.
But it's not just the narrative. It's also Luke includes all these unique sayings and parables of Jesus that aren't found anywhere else. And these offer like a totally fresh perspective.
So can you give us some examples of those?
Yeah, sure. Like, for example, there are four miracles that are only recorded in Luke.
Okay.
The healing of the man with a withered hand. The healing of the woman who had been crippled for 18 years.
Okay.
The healing of a man who was suffering from dropsy on the Sabbath. And then the cleansing of the 10 lepers. And what's interesting is that three of these miracles, they're either about, you know, controversies around the Sabbath, or they highlight how Jesus interacts with people who are considered outsiders. Like the Samaritan leper who comes back to thank Jesus.
Right, right.
So this emphasis on the Sabbath. And on outsiders, it might hint at what Luke is concerned about.
Yeah, who he's writing to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about parables?
Oh, the parables. Yeah. Luke is known for his parables.
Which ones are unique to Luke?
Well, we got, of course, the Good Samaritan.
Okay.
The parable that shows what it means to love your neighbor through, you know, selfless service.
Right, right.
And then we got the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, which is a powerful lesson in humility and, you know, the uselessness of self-righteousness.
Right.
We also find in Luke the parable of the persistent friend and the persistent widow, both emphasizing the importance of, you know, being persistent in prayer and holding on to, like, the hope of what's to come. And then who could forget the stories of the lost coin and the prodigal son?
Yes.
These stories really paint a vivid picture of God's love and joy when someone who's lost is found.
Right.
And then Luke also gives us the parables of the rich fool and the shrewd manager, which are about, you know, using our resources wisely and helping others, especially the poor. And then finally, there's the parable of the rich man and Lazarus.
Right.
That parable really highlights the consequences of ignoring those in need.
Wow. So there's this strong, like, ethical
thread
running through all these parables.
There is compassion, social justice, the right use of wealth. It's a huge theme in Luke.
Okay, and you mentioned earlier some parables that maybe have parallels in Matthew,
right?
But they have this distinct Lucan flavor.
That's right.
Can you give us some of those?
Sure. So you have like the parable about being faithful servants until master comes back.
Okay.
Or the image of rejoicing at the table in God's kingdom.
Okay.
And then the parable about the shepherd rejoicing over the one lost sheep.
Right.
And then the call to be faithful in taking care of the master's stuff. And while these ideas are found in Matthew too, Luke presents them in a way that emphasizes God's plan and our role in that plan.
So all of this, this L material, it really shows us what was important to Luke.
It does. It really shows us the breadth of Luke's concerns.
Yeah.
And his pastoral heart for his readers.
Okay. Now let's talk about Luke's Gospel and Acts.
Okay.
These are just two random books that ended up beside each other.
No. No, not at all. Luke wrote his gospel as the first part of a two-part work.
Right.
And we see that in how both books begin. They both have these similar prologues that are addressed to Theophilus.
Right, right.
I mean, compare Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, with Acts chapter 1, verse 1.
Okay.
And you see, the style is really similar. And in Acts, Luke explicitly refers back to his gospel as the first account. So that shows us that they were meant to be read together.
Oh, okay. So this is like, it was meant to be a two-volume set.
Exactly. You know, it's like ancient historians, they would often do that.
Okay.
Like Josephus in his work Against Apion. He refers back to his earlier writings.
Got it.
And Luke's doing the same thing here. And notice, too, how Acts chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 specifically mention the things that happened in Jesus' ministry, which Luke described in detail in the gospel.
Okay, so it's a clear continuation.
It is. It's very intentional.
And you also mentioned that there are shared themes running through the two.
Yeah.
Can you give us some examples of those?
Yeah, we see these really cool parallels in terms of like the types of actions and the journeys that are undertaken.
Yeah.
Just like Jesus performs all these miracles of healing in the gospel.
Right.
So do Peter and Paul in the book of Acts.
Okay.
And both narratives feature these really important journeys towards these major cities. So you got Jesus's journey to Jerusalem, which ends with his passion.
Right.
And then you have Paul's journey to Rome, which marks a turning point in the spread of the gospel to the Gentile world. And tragically, both Jesus and Stephen, they face opposition that leads to their death. And even the account of Jesus's ascension, that's a really important link. Because it appears at the end of Luke's gospel.
Okay.
And then again at the beginning of Acts. It's a seamless transition.
Oh, I see.
So Luke is drawing these parallels on purpose to show the continuity between what Jesus did and what the Holy Spirit is now doing. Through the apostles, he's showing us how the story of Jesus sets the stage for the mission of the church. So it's more than just a story.
Right.
He's giving us the theology behind the church's mission to the whole world.
So Luke is presenting this, like, cohesive picture that shows how God's plan is unfolding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Through Jesus and the church.
Okay, so this leads to the question of Luke's reliability as a historian. I mean, was he being accurate in telling these stories?
Yeah, that's a good question, and scholars are still talking about that one. You know, some say that Luke, because he's writing with this theological agenda, might have, you know, changed some details to make his point. While others say, no, he was very careful. He researched things.
Okay.
And was very accurate in what he presented.
Okay.
You know, critics like Golder, Hansen, Dibelius, Essler, they've all raised questions about whether Luke was accurate in some of his accounts.
Okay. What kind of accounts?
Well, like the census under Quirinius,
the
timing of some events around Titus's siege of Jerusalem, the authenticity of some of Jesus's parables and sayings, the miracles, the details of Jesus' trials and resurrection, the speeches that he records in Acts, the way he portrays the early church as being unified, and even specific events like the conversion of Cornelius and the Jerusalem Council.
Wow, so there's a lot of stuff being questioned.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's complicated.
So how do we make sense of all of that?
Well, each of these points that are being criticized, you have to look at it case by case.
Okay.
Look at the historical evidence. And then also our own personal beliefs. They can affect how we see things. But when you look at how Luke used his sources, I think you can make a strong case that he was generally trustworthy. Like scholars, Martin Hangel and Colin Hymer, they analyzed Luke's writings. And they said that Luke was very familiar with the geography and customs and even like the Roman government of the first century. And they say that Luke was as accurate as other historians of that time.
Oh, so we're not saying that he was like making stuff up.
No, no, not at all.
Okay.
But like many ancient writers, Luke may have arranged things thematically.
Okay.
Or he might have summarized some speeches.
Right.
But that doesn't mean he was inventing things.
Good.
He was a careful observer. He was interested in the order of events, but also the theological meaning of those events. He was a historian, but also a theologian and a pastor.
Okay, so it's all combined together.
Exactly. You can't separate those things in Luke.
Okay, so now let's turn to the why, who, and where. So the purpose, readers, and location of writing for Luke Acts.
Right.
First up, we have this guy, Theophilus.
Yeah, the mysterious Theophilus.
Who is this guy?
Well, that's a great question. We don't know for sure. But some believe that Theophilus was already a Christian.
Okay.
And maybe he wanted a more orderly account of Jesus's life and the beginnings of the church, you know, to strengthen his own faith.
Right.
Others think he might have been a high-ranking guy.
Okay.
Maybe even a Roman official who was curious about Christianity.
Okay.
And he needed an explanation.
So he needed like a crash course.
Right. Like Christianity 101.
Yeah. Okay. So scholars have offered a lot of suggestions about Luke's purpose in writing.
They have. But most of these suggestions, they all point to a few key things.
Okay. What are those?
God's role in salvation and the creation of this new community of believers.
Okay.
You know, it's not just a bunch of individuals.
Right.
This is a new community that God is forming.
So according to scholars like Bach,
yeah,
what were some of Luke's reasons for writing?
Well, Bach suggests that Luke wanted to give Theophilus and others a solid foundation
right.
for their faith.
Yeah.
Second, he wanted to show that God had been faithful to Israel, even though some had rejected Jesus.
Okay.
Third, he wanted to justify the inclusion of Gentiles into this new community and answer any accusations of disloyalty to Rome.
Right, because now you have Gentiles and Jews together.
Exactly. And finally, maybe Luke wanted to show that Christianity wasn't a rejection of Judaism,
okay.
but rather a fulfillment of it.
Okay. And these reasons, they really seem to fit with what we see in Luke Acts?
They do.
Oh.
Especially in that L material.
Okay, so some scholars suggest that maybe Theophilus wasn't a believer yet, just someone who was interested.
Yeah.
But you said earlier that the language Luke uses seems to indicate that Theophilus had already heard about Jesus.
Right. In Luke chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, Luke uses the phrase, "so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught."
Oh, yeah.
And that implies that Theophilus has already received some instruction.
Okay, and also, Luke Acts is so theologically deep.
It is very deep.
That it seems like it would be.
Uh-huh.
Way too much for just someone who is curious.
Yeah. It would be a bit much for Christianity 101. I think Luke is writing to someone who's already engaged
yeah.
with the faith, but maybe struggling with some things.
Okay. So maybe Theophilus was a Gentile
mm-hmm.
who was drawn to Judaism.
Yeah.
But hadn't officially converted.
Yeah.
And now he's part of this new Christian movement.
Right.
But maybe he's feeling some tension.
It's possible.
Yeah. Okay. And what about this word, God-fearer?
Yeah. God-fearers. So this was a term used for Gentiles.
Okay.
Who were attracted to Judaism.
Okay.
They worshipped the God of Israel. They followed Jewish ethics, but they hadn't, like, fully converted.
Okay.
They hadn't gone through, like, circumcision and the rituals.
So maybe that's who Theophilus was.
Yeah, it's possible.
Okay.
And this makes sense when you see how prominent God-fearers are in Acts and mm-hmm. how much Luke uses the Old Testament. It seems like Luke is trying to reassure Theophilus that he is truly part of God's people, that God's plan always included the Gentiles. He traces Jesus's ministry to show that it led to this inclusive community.
Okay.
And then in Acts, he shows how the Holy Spirit guided the apostles to spread the gospel to all people.
Right, right.
And the conflicts that arose. They weren't because the Christians were trying to separate themselves. It was because they were including Gentiles. And Luke doesn't hide that.
Oh, so Luke is like upfront about these conflicts.
Oh, yeah. He's honest.
Oh, yeah.
About the struggle.
Okay. So where was Luke when he wrote all this?
That's a tough one.
Okay.
We don't know for sure. And different scholars have different ideas.
Okay.
And it often depends on when they think Luke Acts was written.
Okay.
Like if it was written in the 60s AD, then maybe it was Caesarea or Rome.
Okay.
Because that's where Paul was imprisoned.
Okay.
But if it was later, like the 80s or 90s,
yeah.
then maybe it was Antioch or Greece. Some later prologues to Luke Acts say it was Achaia, which is in Greece. But others say Rome.
Okay.
But honestly, we just don't know for sure.
Yeah. It's one of those mysteries.
It is.
Okay, now for the big question.
Okay.
When was this thing written?
Yeah, the dating of Luke Acts. It's a big debate.
Okay.
Now, some scholars have suggested some really late dates.
Okay.
Like the early to mid-second century. But most scholars don't agree with that.
Okay, why not?
Well, the overall tone of Acts, it doesn't reflect those later persecutions under emperors like Domitian.
Okay.
Plus, it doesn't seem like Luke knew about Paul's letters. Because he doesn't interact with them.
Okay.
So for a long time, the most popular view has been that Luke Acts was written in the 80s or 90s AD.
Okay.
After the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD.
Okay. So after the fall of Jerusalem. Okay. Yeah. So why do they think that?
Well, there are a few main arguments.
Okay.
First, they say Luke used Mark's gospel.
Okay.
Which was probably written in the 60s.
Right.
So Luke must have written sometime after that.
Okay.
Second, they say that Luke portrays Paul in a heroic light, which suggests that Luke was writing after Paul had finished his ministry.
Okay.
Third, the way that Luke describes the churches, especially like a developed church in Ephesus.
Okay.
They say that fits better with a later time period.
Okay.
Like before those persecutions in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And then the most important argument
okay.
is that Luke includes these prophecies from Jesus
okay.
about the destruction of Jerusalem.
Right.
And many scholars say that these prophecies sound like Luke is describing something that's already happened, So he must be writing after 70 AD.
Right.
And then some scholars also point to certain theological ideas in Luke Acts that they say fit better with a later period of Christian thought.
But as always, there are counterarguments.
Of course, there are.
So what are the counterarguments to those?
Well, first, the idea that Paul is only a hero, that's debatable because Acts also describes the struggles and disagreements that Paul faced.
Right.
And second, the picture we get of the churches, that could fit with an earlier time, too. Okay. Before those persecutions under Nero or Domitian.
Okay.
And then this idea that Luke's theology is late, that's also debated by more conservative scholars.
So really the main arguments for a late date come down to those prophecies about Jerusalem and the idea that Luke used Mark.
Right. Those are the two big ones. Uh-huh. So scholars like Esler, they say that the details in Luke's apocalyptic passages,